Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Wednesday, February 24th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, gold had a good and bad day today. We had a big rise in spot prices today. Paper markets opened down very strong today. They were down almost 300 points with gold rising, passing the 1250 level. 1254 is a high. About midday, everything started to reverse itself. We're still showing a 350 positive on gold at 1229.90. Silver was down 6 cents at 1531. And the high for silver today was 1566. Platinum was down 6 at 942. Palladium is down 13 at 490. Paper dollar today, the USDX today, again, that reversed itself, 97.46. All markets reversed themselves. Even crude oil was down big, and it turned around to 0.42 to the upside at 32.29. And the paper markets... Let me get to that screen. And we do have Wendy Wilson joining us today from Apothecary Herbs. As soon as I'm done with these paper numbers. Paper markets, the Dow was up 53 points, 16,484. The NASDAQ up 39 at 45.42. After that was down about 2% earlier in trade. The S&P up 8 at 19.29. Even the 10-year yield, that was like 1.65, I believe I saw it, and that reversed 1.74%. The euro's holding 110. Germany was down big, 2.6%. London, 1.6. Hong Kong, 1.1. Japan, under 1%. So negative markets around the world, and hey, the good old U.S. of A was managed to be up 53 points, a little over a quarter of a percent. So these other markets got to get on the ball and learn how the U.S. manipulates. Then they can.
They're learning.
They're learning. They're slow learners, yeah. But they're coming along. They're coming along.
We should have a class. The Federal Reserve should be conducting a class this spring.
for China and Europe that you guys don't understand how to properly manipulate your
pockets.
You're getting in a lot of trouble here, pushing those buttons and pulling those levers when you don't understand how they work. So,
So anyway, interesting day, and but it was good to see gold higher. It was good to see it pass over 1250. We need to get it closed up above there, and we'll have to see what tomorrow brings.
Yep.
Now I'd like to say hello to Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. We always enjoy having her join us on Wednesdays. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Oh, good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Al. How's everybody?
Good.
Great.
How you doing, Wendy?
I'm good. I thought we'd talk about some evident changes in the free health care. We got some hostile health care situations, actually, according to medical staff. And, socialized medical systems, they tend to be riddled with supply and staffing and drug availability problems. And so this is what the U.S. hospitals are now experiencing. And there's also a morale problem. So according to some of the healthcare employees that are working inside of healthcare, they say it has become a hostile environment. So
hostile for patients or hostile for employees?
Well, it's hostile for employees, but it doesn't do the patients any good, if you know what I'm saying. There are reports that there, is hostility, but are they exaggerated? Well, according to Patricia Barnes, she's the author of Surviving Bullies, Queen Bees, and Psychopaths in the Workplace. She says the reports are valid. She says it's characterized by repetition, duration, escalation, and power disparity and willful intent. So this hostility aren't isolated incidents among staff, and it creates a lot of job stress. And it's not like sexual harassment, which is a well-defined legal definition. Bullying is yet to have a well-established unified legal definition. Now, according to a 2007 WBI survey, 13% of U.S. employees report they are bullied at work, and 12% say they witness it. So the Workplace Bullying Institute reports that women are more of a bully target than men by 57%, and men are more likely to participate in bullying behavior by 60%. And get this statistic, Al, Melody, divorced or separated individuals are bullied more at work than married, widowed, or never married workers. This is odd. Now,
Let me ask you a question. Let's see if I understand this clearly. Are you saying these statistics apply to all workers in the United States, or they apply to government workers?
Those are to all workers, but we're going to get more specific to the hospital workers in just a minute. Basically, all these stats are showing true to form that the person that's higher educated is usually the individual that's a bully compared to those that maybe just have a high school education. That's just what the statistics are showing. Now, there was a 2010 survey that showed that people who worked in protective services, community and social service occupations, and public administration and retail trade industries have a higher rate of bullying there at 16 to 25%. Now, there's a whole profile on bullying behavior and what to look for, but for the lack of time, we can't get that detailed. But I do want to read you some quotes from some nurses who have weighed in, because hospital healthcare professionals, if they're forced to cope in a hostile environment, the patient care is suffering. So here's some examples of what some of the nurses are saying. One nurse said, "I'm an ICU nurse and my patient was crashing. I ran to the hall, asked my coworker if she could help me, but she refused, saying, 'Going on a smoke break now.'" And one of the other nurses says, "I can't ask questions. The older nurses look at me like I'm stupid." And then one other quote was, "After I told a younger nurse I couldn't pick up her extra days to cover her vacation, my hair got pulled 3 times during the shift." This is nonsense. It really is.
Well, I understand. And what's the reason for this? And why bullying? I mean, we've got something that's not defined. Do we have a reason for it, or is this just human behavior, or what?
Well, it is, but I think there's a lot of pressure in the healthcare system because their hospitals are running leaner and meaner, if you know what I mean. And I'll get to why in a minute. According to Kathleen Bartholomew, she's the author and a nursing professional national speaker, and she's an expert in physician-to-nurse communications. And she says the bullying in healthcare profession is higher than other professions. It's at 30%. And so there is bullying from doctors to nurses as well as nurses to nurses. So this bullying in healthcare was so bad in Canada that the government there passed the bully busting bill in 2010 after a nurse died as a result of bullying. So, and she reminds us that a lot of the disruptive behaviors are hidden from general view. So according to her, she said the healthcare, when this happens, the bullying in healthcare, it translates to low morale, low patient satisfaction, low patient safety, and low quality of care. And she says the healthcare professionals, they can't think straight because they're so upset and they make mistakes. Just witnessing upset behavior, she says, in the workplace impairs cognitive tasks and productivity. She says that a lot of the high turnover for nurses, most nurses quit in 6 months because of this high stress environment. And she says hospital managers spend 40% of their time resolving conflicts. Eventually, they start to ignore them, and they just call it horizontal hostility in healthcare, which is stupid, but that's what they label it. And some hospitals are taking note and taking some steps to rectify this because all these problems cost the hospital $11,000 per nurse per year, impacts patient safety, and also causes urgent patient events. So some nurses can become so rattled by all this that they make medication mistakes. So
why aren't the bullies identified and simply fired?
Well, and that's the thing. One of the reasons is there's fear. The bullies really know how to manipulate, and I didn't get to go over the bully profile, but they usually pick out people that are weaker than them. And they can leverage their position over those people. And so they use a lot of fear. And 93% of the bully communication is nonverbal. They can just control you with a look. So it's really if you've never been abused, it's hard to understand. It really is. I've not worked in healthcare for 20 years, but I know things have changed, and I think our job right now is to stay out of those hospital environments, you know, prevent disease or reverse it if you have it, and cleansing and nourishing the body is the way I usually go. But I do have more on this. The Affordable Care Act is so bogged down, Melody and Al, that it's so full of a lot of administrative garbage that patient care is being sacrificed. There's ill-trained staff. They're unable to accurately fulfill basic risk assessments for high-risk patients. And patients are complaining. They're paying hundreds of dollars a day, and staff can't manage IV drips, dressing changes, or empty bedpans. And physicians and nurses aren't reading patient records entirely. And there's they skip over things like drug allergies, which is real important, or warnings that are written on the chart by a consultant MD, that there's a change in the patient's health. So this all adds up to mistreatment. And ERs are on record as saying that they're having trouble getting pain medications. And American hospitals really aren't coming up to bar with the nourishment on the meals either. So it's really fallen apart in a lot of different areas. There was a report, Al, on the hospital layoffs from 2013 to 2015, and they're in the thousands. I don't have time to list them all. I'll just list by state. Hawaii had layoffs. Mississippi, their big university hospitals. Massachusetts, North Carolina, Connecticut, California, Missouri, New York, Colorado, Indiana, Tennessee. Now, Louisiana Baton Rouge State University Medical, largest layoff. Over 2,300 employees, as well as the Cleveland Clinic, they also had around a 3,000 employee layoff. So big white flag is a waving for the government to take over to have a one-payer system. That's what you're seeing on the way. So,
but even if you do, that's not going to stop the problems we're talking about here.
No.
It sounds like
worse.
It sounds like what you really need is a doctor who is your personal doctor, all right, as opposed to an institution where if you've got a doctor the way it used to be, he wants to see your doctor. He and his nurses took care of you. There was a personal relationship. Right now, we've become anonymous in these hospital institutions, and nobody really cares.
Well, you know? Here's the thing. The hospitals, because of the Affordable Care Act and the way that it's structured, there's really zero room for the hospitals now to make mistakes. Basically, the federal government will not reimburse for services they feel were in error, neglectful, or unnecessary. So if the hospitals can't be inefficient, but they're becoming more inefficient. What happens
and
is if
what's driving that inefficiency?
Right, and if a patient returns to the hospital after being discharged within 60 days, the hospital can face a fine from the government. They didn't do their job well enough. The patient's still coming back. So
it's in their interest to kill them. You need to die in the hospital. It looks like you're going to be back in 60 days. We're going to operate.
Basically, in order for them to comply with all the Affordable Care Act mandates, they have to demonstrate services that they provided to the patient were necessary to keep the patient healthy. And the problem is it's making it more expensive for the hospitals to operate to comply, and it's making it harder for them to get paid. Let me read you this report I just got in this week where the people that are on the exchange, the Affordable Care Act programs, their deductibles have jumped from $800 to over $1,200. And what the hospitals are seeing is these patients that are on the bronze and silver plans, which have really high deductibles of $2,000 to $5,000, the hospitals are actually asking for their money up front when the patient comes into the hospital, or they won't get served because they know that these guys can't pay for it. And so they'll never get their money. So now hospitals are looking at it as a dine and dash kind of situation. And so they want their money up front before you even get admitted now.
Well, that's just evidence that this whole free healthcare thing is collapsing around Obama's ears.
Right, right, absolutely. Well, and the other thing that the hospitals are doing as a loophole is they won't admit a patient, especially under Medicare, because if you're under observation, that means all the money, all the treatment is out of pocket for the patient. They don't have to deal with Obama administration, and so they are on purpose not admitting anybody, and then the patient's unaware that they are on the hook for the whole bill.
So your recommendation is that we avoid these problems by staying out of the hospitals if at all possible, and we do that how?
Well, I mean, cleanse the nurse. You get the toxins out that cause cellular stress and weakness, and you put the nutrition in. That's pretty basic. You'd be amazed how the body bounces back and regenerates itself. And then there's some immune boosting you can do along the way as well. And that's what we specialize in. And I have seen it over and over again that this really corrects a lot of internal medicine problems. So if people would like a free catalog, we'll send it to them. Toll-free numbers to call is 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or just visit the website, thepowerherbs.com. Thanks, guys.
All right, Wendy, thank you. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our extra strength pain relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cedarstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I want to remind the listeners to visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter that comes out on Mondays. And, of course, we do archive our radio programs. You can listen there live, and they are archived, dgscoins.com. We got some great prices on gold and silver. They're kind of hard to price out specials because of the way the prices have just fluctuated so much. We do have some great fractional pieces in. We have some 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagles along with Silver Eagles. There are no delays in any of the product. The only product that I'd mentioned yesterday when Greg Hunter was on the air with us were foreign gold and platinum items, and they're even beginning to move a little bit more. So no delays in any of the product. It's just a matter of getting it in sometimes because we order and they deliver, but we have to wait sometimes. There's a little gap, a day or two, but very rarely does anybody even notice that little gap. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
An article from the Washington Times reporting what everyone already knows. I'm sure you know, but it's worth talking about a little bit. Donald Trump dominates in Nevada. Businessman Donald Trump easily won the Nevada GOP caucuses Tuesday, rolling to his third straight victory in the 2016 nomination race and giving him extra momentum heading into the delegate-rich Super Tuesday contests next week. 30 delegates to the Republican National Convention were at stake. This is in Nevada. Trump's victory followed wins in New Hampshire and South Carolina. With 100% of the vote counted, Mr. Trump had 45.9% of the vote. Mr. Rubio at 23.8%, Mr. Cruz at 21.3%. Retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson was at 4.8%, Ohio Governor John Kasich was trailing at 3.6%. You have to wonder when John Kasich is going to probably, is he going to see the light here before this is all over? And Ben Carson also, are they going to drop out or are they going to hang on until the bitter end?
Ben Casey. You remember Ben Casey?
Did I say Ben Casey?
Yeah, at first you did, but yeah.
Well, I should have said Dave Carson. Dave Carson's not the guy running either, but Dave Carson's somebody I used to know years ago.
Yeah,
a friend of mine, yeah, back in the day. Mr. Trump capitalized on voter frustration with Washington, with entrance polls showing that about 6 in 10 caucus voters wanted a candidate from outside the political establishment and were angry with the federal government. Now, we talked a little about that on another program I do on Tuesday nights. There are a couple of surveys out that show that, on one hand, the biggest fear in people's lives, they did a survey and they listed 88 items that some people regard it as fearful. The number one fear for Americans is government corruption. All right? That's interesting. And there were more government-related fears in addition to that, but that was the number one at 58%. Second survey came out and was similarly another indication that people are just fed up to their ears with government. All right? Numbers in terms of 60, 70, 80% of the people have a very negative attitude toward government. And there's a point behind this. And the point is that most of the people, certainly I am anti-government, all right? I don't like what's going on with our government. I feel that the government is betraying us on a regular basis. And I think most of the people who listen to this program think the same way, or at least, you know, they are susceptible to that thinking. Well, we tend to view ourselves as a minority. And people, if you have a negative opinion about the government, well, I better keep my mouth shut. Don't say anything because they'll all think I'm crazy. Turns out we're in the majority. All right? We're not some little lunatic fringe. The ideas and the attitudes that we espouse and that most of the people listening to this program embrace to some degree, these attitudes and ideas are common in the United States. And the only thing that keeps many of us from talking about it is that the mainstream media doesn't really give us much play. They don't talk on a regular basis about how people have become disenchanted and even antagonistic to government. If we were getting a more legitimate play out of the mainstream media, there'd be a lot more people that would be standing up in the open and saying, hey, this stuff's got to stop. Trump is, his candidacy and his success is an illustration of this idea. Trump is not some lunatic off the lunatic fringe. Trump is talking about what Americans in general are talking about. And he's the first one to do it, and for the moment, he's more or less the only one who's doing it. And that's why people, again, 6 in 10 caucus voters wanted a candidate from outside the political establishment. We know they're a bunch of crooks. They don't even bother to hide it. They don't have enough respect for us to even hide their treason. Their willingness to allow illegal aliens to pour into the country. Their willingness to encourage illegal aliens to come into the country. Bring Muslims in from the Middle East. Send our jobs to foreign countries. And the idiots, that would be you and me, we're supposed to just sit there and accept it and never complain and never understand. Well, it's turning out that 60, 70, 80% of the people do understand. And Trump has been the first politician to stand up and take advantage and speak out and say what a lot of people are saying, but only secretly, privately, because they thought they were all alone. Now we're beginning to find out, nope, they're not alone. They are, they have been the silent majority, and they are becoming the loud majority. Mr. Trump won 70% of those who wanted an outsider, and 49% said of those who were angry. He even won 44% of the Hispanic vote in Tuesday's contest. Now, there's a surprise. I mean, Trump, after saying we need to get rid of the illegal aliens, You would think you'd have a hard time finding one Hispanic in 100 who would be prepared to support Trump. And in Nevada, 44% of the Hispanic vote in the Tuesday Republican primary, they said, yeah, vote for Trump.
Well, they do have a lot of Hispanics in Nevada, and he does supply a lot of jobs to them in Las Vegas. But what I find encouraging, Al, is the numbers that you're talking about, a group of people that, you know, there's more of us. We're not the minority. We're the majority. My question is, look how many more that are still quiet because they don't want to go with the flamboyant Mr. Trump. You know, so many of them that are still tied to that Republican Party. I'll guarantee you there's a large percent that have those same feelings and they want a voice, but they can't go against their commitment to the Republican Party.
Well, they can if they want to.
It's a process. You know, so I would expect that those numbers, and I'm talking this in a positive manner, I would expect that those numbers are even greater.
Well, I think that's what we're going to see. We've seen these numbers are large right now. I think they'll get larger. According to this article, again, from the Washington Times, I think that's where it was from, turnout was at a record pace, indicating that Mr. Trump drove first-time voters to the caucuses. Trump is attracting people who don't normally vote. Huh? And that's probably half the American people. Now, I don't mean that he's attracted, that everyone who doesn't normally vote is all of a sudden attracted to Mr. Trump. But nevertheless, he's getting people involved because he's a candidate who says, look, some of this is a bunch of crapola and it needs to be stopped. And he's not mincing words. I don't necessarily agree with everything Trump is doing, but nevertheless, he's putting things out in the open. And he's telling everyone in Washington, every congressman, every senator, that business as usual is not going to be usual in the future. You're going to take bribes at your own peril. You're going to betray the American people's interests at your own peril. You want to vote for the Trans-Pacific Partnership? You want to vote for the trade agreements that send our economy down the toilet? We're going to make you get yourself a real job. We're going to run you out of Congress. We're going to run you out of the Senate. This is no longer a situation where the government can just sit back and do as they please, and everybody's just going to put up with it. We're seeing the beginning of a dramatic change, and I expect that change to become more pronounced and more obvious over the next few years. It's going to be a dangerous time to be a politician. There are a lot of people who are fed up, and we've been silent. We've put up with it. The government thought we'd put up with it forever. You know, there's a line in the Declaration of Independence, and I'm gonna look for it right this moment, see if I can find it. It says, "All experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed." What they're saying is that people will put up with an enormous amount of abuse before they finally say, all right, you SOBs, here we come. We are beginning to see, with the Trump campaign, we're beginning to see evidence of people who have finally had enough. The evils are no longer sufferable, and they are now ready to go after the forms to which they've become accustomed, which we find in Washington, D.C. right now. I don't know how this is going to play out, but I would say that the people in government, they need to pay attention. I don't doubt they are paying attention, and many of them are saying, oh, my God, how are we going to get out of this one? And I don't think they are. They have dug a hole for the whole country, and now they want to try to avoid responsibility for having dug that hole. And I think they're going to find out maybe we'll put that hole to good use before this is all over. In any case, Trump won. It's not a surprise, but some of the evidence, again, the numbers that are voting for him, and the people coming from 44% of the Hispanic vote went for Trump. I mean, that's pretty amazing. That's really pretty amazing. So we'll see.
There is a logical reason for that. I mean, maybe it's more, you know, a different reason,
Trump doesn't employ 44% of the Hispanic people in Nevada.
What? No, but I mean, they know they're... I didn't say he employs 44%.
I understand, but...
But I'm sure he has a very strong presence along with the other hotel owners and so forth and whatnot. But I'm just... It's interesting that... And it'll be interesting to see when you get to another state that has a high Hispanic population to see... And that will give us a true, you know, a true signal of where those numbers came from. But he has to do it in another state too.
Mm-hmm. Then you do it in one. You start with one. You know, one is one.
Hey, look.
Then you work on three.
There's no reason why he wouldn't get the Hispanic vote because you have Hispanics that are here legally, that are working legally, and anything that comes across the border illegally also competes for their jobs.
I understand
so,
that.
So yes, I can see where.
But it's breaking up a stereotype. But he's breaking up a stereotype. And even the Hispanic people, it's a little like the American people in the surveys I was talking about. Two surveys that indicate one, people's greatest fear in this country is government corruption. Right? The single greatest fear, and they list 88 different things you can be afraid of. And the biggest fear was government corruption. All right? It's evidence of a dramatic change in public opinion, public sentiment. If 44% of the Hispanic vote are voting in favor of Mr. Trump, they're saying to heck with the Hispanic agenda.
Let's see how another state comes out.
Well, we'll see.
So it'll be interesting. It's very interesting. And
All right. Here's another one. This is from the Wall Street Journal, and the headline is J.P. Morgan. What's even scarier than oil? That's the headline. According to J.P. Morgan Chase, the biggest threat to future earnings isn't low prices, and it means future earnings for the bank. The biggest threat to future earnings isn't low prices, low oil prices. It's super low interest rates, and we've talked about this in the last week or so. The negative interest rates that are proposed and in some places implemented in Europe, for example, and Japan, and some people are proposing them for here in the United States, and even zero interest rates. These have to have brutalized the banks. And a lot of people have said, look, the banks are all working hand in glove. The Federal Reserve and the central banks of the world are working with the rest of the banks, and they're out to oppress us and the rest of that. And the banks are finally coming up and say, look, we're taking a beating on this thing. And here's J.P. Morgan Chase. Again, biggest threat is super low interest rates. Suppressed interest rates are far more damaging to long-run profitability. They present a couple of examples, and if the Federal Reserve sticks to the pace of tightening implied by its latest forecast for the short-term rates are likely to end up in coming years, these projected increases for 2016 and afterwards would bring the federal funds rate to around 3.25% by the end of 2018 from 0.375% now. In the blue sky scenario, J.P. Morgan would earn about $10 billion if interest rates went from 0.375% to 3.25%. They'd earn an additional $10 billion in 2018. If they stay more or less, if they are increased more gradually, J.P. Morgan would only get $6 billion of an additional net income. Well, they're saying, look, our income depends on these interest rates. And the big story here is that banks that were deemed too big to fail just 8 years ago are now being abandoned, seemingly abandoned, and left to make it on their own or go bankrupt. The Fed that nurtured banks and protected them through the Great Recession appears not only unable or unwilling to do so again, but it seems to be creating economic circumstances like zero interest rate policy, which we've had for 8 years, or negative interest rate policy, which is being proposed in places, that will certainly impoverish the banks. So what's going on here? If some of the banks were truly too big to fail just 8 years ago, why are they being left to fail today? Something strange is happening. Don't know precisely what it is, but it's something to watch. Let's take a break for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We've got an article from Bloomberg. Saudi Arabia to U.S. oilmen, cut costs or exit the business. There's the headline. The world's most powerful oil man brought a harsh message to Houston for executives hoping for a rescue from low prices. High-cost producers need to either lower costs, borrow cash, or liquidate. The message came from Saudi Arabian oil minister Ali Al-Naimi. And it means that deeper spending cuts, laying off more roughnecks, and idling drilling rigs is coming to the American industry, oil industry. According to Naimi, he says it sounds harsh, and unfortunately it is, but it is the most efficient way to rebalance markets. As many as 74 North American producers face significant difficulties in sustaining debt, according to a credit rating from credit rating firm Moody's Investor Services. Shale explorers from Texas to North Carolina will be decimated in coming months amid a wave of restructuring and bankruptcies. In months, you know. Shale explorers from Texas to North Carolina, they're predicting they're going to be decimated in coming months, that's this year, amid a wave of restructurings and bankruptcies. For the oil industry itself, the warning is a sign of more months, perhaps years, of financial pain. Naimi told executives in Houston that Saudi Arabia believed that freezing oil production, as just agreed with Russia, would be enough to eventually balance the market. Over time, high-cost producers will get out of the business, and rising demand will slowly eat up the oversupply. Now, he's talking about freezing production with Russia. And he goes on and he says the freeze agreement with Russia isn't cutting production. That's not going to happen, Naimi said. All right, so Saudi Arabia is saying we're not going to produce anymore. We're not going to raise our production limits. We've frozen them at this top level. But we're not cutting. That's not going to happen. So all this means is they're going to hold what they've got, and they're going to let the rest of the war, the oil world, essentially fight it out to see who's going to survive. And many of the firms and perhaps even some countries won't survive without, I mean, firms will go bankrupt, and some of the countries will certainly go into political instability. And Saudi Arabia said, better them than us. In Houston, Naimi faced the same people that Saudi Arabia is trying to put out of business, from North Dakota shale and Canadian tar sands to the deep water fields of offshore Brazil, who need prices far above current levels to make profits. For the past year and a half, they have been fighting for survival. And Naimi comes out and he says, quite correctly, he says, cutting low-cost production to subsidize higher cost supplies only delays an inevitable reckoning. And he's exactly right. That's what people want. They say, you guys that are producing oil so cheap, you need to stop it so the rest of us can continue producing at higher prices. And Saudi Arabia said, why should we subsidize you people that are producing at higher prices? Why should we cut our production, cut our income in order to subsidize you at higher prices? In the end, it's a false, I mean, the idea of subsidizing higher prices, what industry can you point to where we can do that, and it's ultimately going to be good for the people, good for even the industry?
It'll be interesting to see if China or maybe even the Saudis will come in and pick up some of these, some of the drilling and so forth that is ready to go belly up.
I don't expect they will. I mean, all things considered, they're not going to make a recovery. It's not as if you're going to be able to get a good buy
on
a cheap oil well right now.
At rock bottom. Maybe at rock bottom.
Who's going to want them? If there's a glut of oil, at least so long as the glut remains, you know, people are going to sit back and say, I don't need another oil. Well, what do I need that for? It's not going to make me any money. Here's another article from Bloomberg.
It would be a nice place to be buying up some oil in the United States if you don't have a position there.
Yeah, but
nice foot in the door.
Yeah, but
you can cap those rigs.
Yes, but what door? Here's an article from Bloomberg, another one. And it says another oil crash is coming and there may be no recovery. And they say superior electric cars are on their way, and they could begin to wreck oil markets within a decade. In fact, they talk about within 7 years. It's time for oil investors to start taking electric cars seriously. In the next 2 years, Tesla and Chevy plan to start selling electric cars with a range of more than 200 miles priced at the $30,000 range. Ford is investing billions. Volkswagen is investing billions. And Nissan and BMW are investing billions. Nearly every major car maker, as well as Apple and Google, is working on the next generation of plug-in cars. Question is, how soon could electric vehicles trigger an oil glut by reducing demand by 2 billion barrels? Even amid low gasoline prices last year, electric car sales jumped 60% worldwide. Now, that's an impressive figure. We've seen jokes. I've seen, well, now, you know, and I've joked myself, now you can afford to go buy yourself an SUV because gas prices are low. But in fact, the electric car sales jumped 60%, even though the price of gasoline was at nearly record low levels. People are still buying electric cars. If that level of growth continues, a crash-triggering benchmark of 2 million barrels of reduced demand could come as early as 2023, 7 years from now. This article implies that electric cars may grow so rapidly by 2023, again, just 7 years from now, the demand for gasoline and crude oil could be cut so low the prices of crude oil and of producing oil-producing corporations' stocks could be permanently diminished. The implication here is that the petroleum industry may be on track to follow the buggy whip manufacturers. It's hard to believe that the petroleum industry might be on the way out and might enter a permanent state of decline within the next 7 years due to the proliferation of electrically powered automobiles, but it's maybe hard to believe right this moment. But it's not impossible. And as fast as things are changing in the world right now, I mean, this could happen. So the times are not only a changing, they're a changing fast, right? So if oil producers look at these, if they agree with this article from Bloomberg and the people behind it, that the oil industry may be on the way out, right? Permanently, not a blip, permanently. Then who wants to buy the oil well? Where's the market going to be for it? Where's the market going to be for oil? There may be a lot of capped oil wells, and in the event we ever run out of batteries for our electric cars, and maybe we'll go uncapped
those. Well, sure. I mean, automobiles does play take a large part of that oil for gasoline, but I mean, there are still other industries that'll continue to use oil. I mean, it's not going to go away.
No, it's not going to die, but the price is going to stay low on into the foreseeable future.
And when I see that electric vehicle, well, you know, then, you know, we'll see. And how long those electric vehicles and to see how easily those vehicles are, you know, brought into the, you know, family garage. I mean, I would love to have one. Don't get me wrong, but you know,
They're out there. They're being sold right now. People are getting them. People are using them.
My family has a Prius, and I really like it. They can use both gasoline and it's great when they're low on gas. They don't have to worry about running out. So it is a neat little vehicle. It really is.
The implication on all of this, though, is that the oil business, they may have one last hurrah, if this article is correct. They may have a last hurrah where prices go higher, significantly higher, sometime during the next 7 years. But that may be the end of the line for them. At that point in time, the number of electric cars in the market may be enough to set a permanent decline in the amount of crude oil that's produced in the world. And given the glut we have already and the glut that we're likely to have thereafter, that means the price of oil is going down. One last significant upward blip, but it's only going to last a couple of years, and then we're going to see a decline that will go on as, you know, on into the future, and oil's going to become something is nowhere near as important as it's been in the last century. It's moved the world for the last century. It's not going to move the world for this century. That's the implication. And all by itself, that suggests we're going to see changes in geopolitics. What's going to happen to the Middle East when they find out that the oil glut is something like permanent? And that prices are permanently low. How much tension will it create over there? What about Venezuela? All right, they're already up to their knees or up to their ears in political instability because oil prices are too low for them. Brazil's going to have a problem. This is going to change. It's going to predispose people to wars. It's going to change political power levels and structures, one thing or another like that. A lot of things are going to happen because of the technology of electric cars. And you can bet, I mean, no one can doubt that whatever the situation is with electric cars right now, Tesla, for example, made a great automobile. They were selling for $75,000 a car, a lot of money for a car. But it is in its own way a spectacular automobile.
Yeah, that should get one in every
garage. And it will become more spectacular and at lower prices. And once somebody makes a real breakthrough in battery technology, and that could happen any day. Maybe it's already happened and it's been to some degree suppressed.
That's what I believe.
All right? Entirely possible. But sooner or later, somebody's going to come out with a battery that will let you let that car ride not just 200 or 250 miles, which isn't enough for cross-country driving. You can't just drive. You can't plan on to drive from New York to California in my electric car if I have to stop every 5 hours to recharge the batteries. Nobody's going to do that. People want to be able to drive 8-10 hours a day. You get a battery in those cars that'll let you drive 8 or 10 hours a day, put on 500 or 600 miles a day, all of a sudden those cars are as good as gasoline-powered vehicles. And we'll see that. And it's just a question of how soon. And when we do, oil industry is going to suffer a significant and permanent decline. Or at least that's the way it appears at the moment. So, you know, I'm just saying, if you've got some money squirreled away under your mattress that you'd like to invest, it may be that the crude oil business is not the place to go. It's perhaps, again, it may have one last hurrah where they make some serious money and people profit and everybody cheers for a couple of years. But long term, oil is perhaps not a dying industry, but it's an industry that's declining, and it's going to continue to decline significantly on into the future. So probably not the place to invest your last money. So there's a word to the wise, Melody. So you need, if you've got some money that you'd like to invest, you need to look for something other than crude oil.
And gee, what would that be, Al?
I have no idea. I'm thinking about baseball cards, maybe.
Baseball cards?
Baseball cards. Ooh. That's what I was thinking about.
Hey, you get the right one, it could be a pretty good return. But we do have some great prices on gold and silver coins. Ladies and gentlemen, give us a call. 1-800-375-4188. And remember, grams, you pay too much for your gold. You're much better off with a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle. You get more gold for your money. I don't know why that's so difficult, but give us a call, 800-375-4188.
Okay, folks, we're out of time. Thank you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money, money, money.